It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us here live from St. John Fisher. We are in the pavilion between the two fields, the turf field, and then actually there's two more fields on this side, and there's a third field over there, so there's four fields overall. And on grass is normally the case with Sean McDermott teams. They're on grass all the time. So we'll get to day two of practice coming your way momentarily. 9:45, I should say. But Sal's coming your way momentarily. Coverage of training camp brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor. You need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Sal, good morning. Long day for you guys. You got camp today, you know, press conferences, all that, and then you and Matt Beauvais are doing a live recording of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo at Barbill East in Rochester
tonight. It'll be a live show. We're going to be going live tonight, Barbill East, so come on out, say hi.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty busy, I think, so it's all right. Come on out, walk around and meet some people or whatever, and, you know, grab some wings, grab something to drink. So, yeah, it's yesterday was a very hectic day getting up here early in the morning. You guys were earlier, probably. I'm sure you were. Because I showed up. And then we had the press conference. We had practice. You know, practice is always like the first day. You're kind of getting the feel for everything the way it is, the lay of the land again. And lots of things are the same that they have been for many years. They use the Beck practice field. A lot of the players go over there. They work on, you know, what's defensive line, things like that. So you're always kind of figuring out where to be, at what times, what to watch. And then obviously there's people you haven't seen in a while. You want to catch up with them. You want to say hi. That can be personal or professional. Right, I mean, like, there's things going on, like, hey, what's happening this day, what's happening that day? You have to do all that stuff. And then right afterwards, you know, we have things. We have the Facebook Lives that are going on behind the scenes at training camp that you can check that out. We do that every single day, driven by your Upstate Honda dealer. So, you know, there's a lot going on. And then today did not start off great. I had a big cup of coffee. I went to my car to grab something. You know, you put your coffee on top of the car, right?
Yeah.
I opened the door. I'm like, okay. I shut the door, and the coffee just crashed down. I have no coffee now until I go back and get some right after this segment up in my dorm room before the Joe Brady.
That's better than me. I usually put the coffee on the car and then I drive away.
I had to stop myself a couple times. that's right.
That's my move. We're here at training camp. It's day two today. All right, observations from day one. Actually, before we do that, you're talking about catching up with people. Like, we saw Pete Gwelly, Bill's COO, talking about the red helmets, talking about the new rivalries uniforms. We don't have any full intel on the rivalries uniforms, but from what I hear from a number of people, this isn't something Pete said, but others, they're cool. I think people are going to like them. So there is I did ask him, like, what's the timeline on that, and he said, like, the league. So that one's a little bit maybe off in the distance. You know, that's more of a league-wide thing because there are eight teams that are going to be getting these rivalry series. Anyway, observations from camp yesterday. It's a lot of red zone stuff, which I learned yesterday is normal to start because they don't want their guys running 70-yard bombs and all that stuff. They want to kind of, you know, get everybody in the mix, so it's kind of a lighter practice, shorter practice, less distance run, red zone to start.
Yeah, red zone to start, 7-on-7 red zone specifically to start. You know, they have different periods they work on all the time during practices. They hit the ground running, and this is a very important part, red zone, obviously. Interesting, the first few plays, Josh Allen didn't connect. A couple interceptions. A couple throwaways, an incompletion. And he said afterwards, it was interesting in the press conference with us, he said, I know statistically it didn't look good for you guys, but I'm just trying not to put the ball in harm's way. And then he also mentioned Hard Knocks. He mentioned not liking being mic'd up. And it was interesting for me to him for thinking about it, right? He's thinking about how people might perceive what's going on these first few throws in the red zone statistically. He's mentioning Hard Knocks being there, and that's all a little bit of what we talked about, right? And how much this all impacts what's going on here. But they did start with that. I was really impressed with the rookie Max Harrison yesterday. I really was. I thought that he had a nice day. He had the highlight play of the day when he peeled off. Who was it? KJ Hamler. KJ Hamler's in the back of the end zone, standing there, and it looked like, and you see the video on Bill's Twitter. It looked like he was going to get the ball. He's the only one that could catch it. Max Harrison comes out of nowhere, knocks the ball away. Before that, he's on Curtis Samuel. Curtis Samuel catches the ball kind of near the front pylon. And before he can turn up, Max Harrison gets there so quick, he rides him out of bounds and doesn't allow him to do that. So, yeah, I think that a strong day, number one, I always say we have to wait until pads come on for a lot of this stuff. Like, I don't watch offensive and defensive linemen much for the first few days only because of that.
Yep. Yeah. Joe had even said, like, Harrison's the kind of guy that in this exact setting is probably likely to flourish. I mean, he's fast. He's speedy. The recovery speed. He's a guy that's going to gamble out there. Red zone's another spot where, like, you might be more willing to do that. So it'll be interesting to see how he picks his spots, right? Like, Sal, if you've got a corner that you drafted him and you say we did it because of his upside ball skills, he can make big plays, he knows that too. And how they find that balance of how aggressive, when to be aggressive, like that's going to be part of learning the job.
No doubt. I believe people keep saying, what would it take for Max Harrison to win the job? Because we could say when fans are here, we are allowed to say, like, who's playing with the starters, right? And I can tell you that Tre'Davious White, as predicted, got the first reps with the starting unit. And then Max Harrison mixes in. But they both get opportunity. Mm-hmm. Eric Wood made a great point when he was on with me the other day. He said, you're going to want to see both guys against the same competition. If you're going to compete, you got to give them a chance to compete against the same competition, right, in evaluation. So what does it take for him to maybe be the first guy to get more of the reps? I believe it just takes for him not to show he's going to make mistakes. Because I think the high-end plays can be there at any time. He can make a great play and make a play on a ball that somebody else can't make. But can he make the solid play, the good decision, not get beat, and be consistent enough in that regard?
And I wonder, there are a couple plays like this. There was at least one I'm thinking of, Sal. I think he was going up against Samuel where he gets beat off the line and maybe he's back a little bit, but he's so fast that he recovers and he's there in coverage to make a play. I wonder how the Bills would view that. Like, that is that considered a mistake for him, but this is why you drafted him? Like, he can kind of misstep off the line of scrimmage, unlike some other corners, because he's so fast. He's got that recovery speed.
Yep.
I wonder how the Bills coaches would view that, because they definitely don't want him getting beat off the line. But with him, again, he's somebody that sometimes can make up for it.
I also think just the nature of this, the way their philosophy of building this team and drafting, they've kind of intentionally gone for guys like that, which are, hey, we might have to live with a few mistakes, but we're going to get more high-end play out of these guys, and the ceiling is really there. I just think that's kind of the way they drafted and they approached this offseason anyway. They took bigger swings. You know, Matt Nobove and I did a podcast a couple months ago comparing Brandon Bean and Brett Veach because they've been in their jobs the same amount of time.
Yep.
Because I think there's this notion from a lot of Bills fans that, you know, the Bills are just not good in the draft or whatever. Most teams, everybody's kind of the same when it comes to rate of hit and miss. I think a lot of it comes down to, but how high are your hits? Like how good can they be?
Yeah.
And the thing that we noticed that I think I could say Matt and I both agreed on, Brandon Bean really has a really good floor for guys he drafts, especially late, mid-round. Like, there's guys that contribute, guys that stay here. I mean, I'm going to use DeMar Hamlin as an example. I mean, he was a six-round pick. He was starting on a team at safety. He went to the AFC Championship game last year. Remember Jaquan Johnson? That was like a sixth or seventh-round pick. He played 4 years in this league. Mm. Taron Johnson, yes, there are misses. But what he was missing, what he hasn't had, is truly the Josh Allen high-end type of plays. I think Taron Johnson's actually great at what he does. Whereas Brett Veach, let's say, for the Chiefs, they have three or four guys that are all pros every year. They smash it through the ceiling. But they don't have necessarily that low-end raising the floor. It's kind of all or nothing with a lot of it. I think the Bills have a good base of guys, but now they need the all.
Right.
You know what I mean? They need those guys. They don't have enough of those guys. And I think they took a philosophy this year to say, we're going to draft these guys that have a chance to smash. And if we get beat, if we get burned because they don't turn out, we're going to have to live with it, but we need playmakers.
Yeah. I was just going to say, a lot of this year to me is finding the next set of stars, whether that's, you know, Benford's established as, like, he's great, whether that's Hairston or Landon Jackson or Deion Walker in the fourth round or whatever. Like, somebody that is – I mean, it's a bit arbitrary, but I kind of said, what I want is the Bills to have more players on the top 100, just thought of better by players in the league. Oh, that's Josh Allen and four other great players because for a long time – or for a while here, 2 years now, it's been like Josh and Dawkins makes it. Benford makes it.
Isn't Benford?
But even Benford, maybe
even he's a great example.
He's not getting enough, right?
Right.
He Benford is a great example of this point, which is, I think we all know how good Christian Benford is. He is just a really, really good football player. he's not this smashing statistical interception guy that right. goes to becomes an all pro and Pro Bowls and things like that. That's a great example of what I mean, which is, man, they really found a guy. Sixth round. Like, I mean, like, he's a great sixth round pick, right?
Yeah.
But he's not in the conversation outside of Buffalo as one of the best in the league. And I, unlike Josh Allen, who obviously is, or Taron Johnson, I think those are the two guys you look at for that. And, you know, yeah. maybe a few years ago, Matt Milano, obviously, right, who's on the team now. So you have some of those guys, Deion Dawkins. But, man, I think that's a great example of what I'm talking about.
Should Benford be? Like he's,
I don't know.
He's front and center on that Hard Knocks poster. We talked about that. And as we talked about yesterday at camp, too, he looked dominant. Sal, like, it didn't matter what receiver he was covering. It looked like he had no problem sticking right with whoever he was against.
Yesterday, you're talking about
Benford,
during the day yesterday during the practice. Yeah, I think he's just super solid.
Yeah,
he is the quintessential Buffalo Bills defensive back that they want here, which is we could trust everything you do. We don't have to worry about it. He's going to be where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there, and he's going to make some plays. But there's not a time in a game, in a season, where we're worried about that spot.
Right.
Right? I think that, to me, that's where Max Harrison has to get. Because the other side, which is, well, he can make a play.
Yeah.
Make a play, Max, right? Knock a ball down. Get an interception. But can you, are you going to be comfortable saying, oh, yeah, we got Max Harrison over there. He's set. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to give him help. We don't have to worry about him busting a coverage or anything like that. That's where he has to get.
It might be a hard day to evaluate safeties because it's red zone stuff, right? Like, the field's compacted, but a lot of people are wanting to know about Cole Bishop and how he looks, health, you know, his role in this defense, how important it is that he does lock down the job that I think a lot of Bills fans, of course, want him to lock down.
I think the Bills want him to lock it down, guys, right? I mean, that's the only thing he has to do is show up and be healthy. I really believe that. Like, he's good enough. He's going to be the starter. I can't see a scenario where Cole Bishop isn't healthy and on the field and suddenly isn't the starter at safety opposite Taylor Rapp. What would have to go wrong there? Because he's not the player you thought he was. He showed some really good things on film when he was – he also had a couple busts. We know that. But I just think this is his job to have as long as he's healthy. Tough to say how they look right now. Obviously, they're rotating in. There's no pads, things like that. We'll see when they go to those kinds of things. But I think – they believe they can use him in the box. They can use him at free safety. And that frees Taylor Rapp up to do a lot of things. You couldn't play those games as much with DeMar last year.
Right.
DeMar is kind of this steady baseline guy who you got to put in certain spots to make sure that you're not going
to
get beat.
And that's always been a key to McDermott's defense is what he can do with those two safeties.
Yes, 100%. And that's why Micah and Jordan were so good for so long. On top of how great they were, they played off each other. They were able to do different things all the time, and that's exactly right.
How about the offense? Anything impressive come away? It looked like there were some – we talked about the throwaways that Josh Allen had, and he talked about that, but anything stand out in a positive way for the offense?
Yeah, I thought Dalton Kincaid had a nice first day. After all the talk from Dalton and about Dalton this offseason, I thought Dalton Kincaid had a good first day. Now, I will tell you, there was one touchdown he caught that would have been a sack if they were doing that. Josh kept the play alive. You know, the defensive backs are still doing their thing, but Dalton made a nice play, caught at the back of the end zone. Then there was another one where – kind of right in the same area in the end zone, and Dalton saw Josh working. He worked his way back to the quarterback. There were two defenders, and he kind of slid in between the two defenders to get back to the quarterback. Josh made a nice throw. I think even the defenders like, oh, shoot, didn't realize he was right there. It was a really good job of kind of staying alive. I thought he had a good day right there, and this is what the Bills need. Obviously, Dawson Knox is going to be out. And by the way, you know the word on Dawson, the word on Spencer, both, neither – Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean seemed very overly concerned. They kind of both said, we're going to be really cautious. Like, these guys are vets.
Yeah.
They'll get on the field. We know they know what to do once they get on the field. So I'm not too worried about that. Laviska Shenault did, according to the NFL transaction wire last night, he has not been announced by the Bills, I don't believe yet. He was placed on NFI as well. So I wouldn't expect him on the field today either. And then Cedric Van Pran Granger with a calf injury.
When that list, a player gets placed on that list as opposed to the pup list, what's the difference there? Does that just mean that, like, it happened away from the facilities?
It did, and I think because of that, there's certain things with monies and contracts that get impacted, especially down the road if they stay on that list. Like Nyheim Hines, remember?
Right.
How the Bills went through that whole thing with Nyheim Hines?
Right.
Right, and it was the jet ski accident. So, yes, that's the difference.
Sal Capaccio. Sal, for day one, we've gotten some big names, right? Hairston,
and Cole Bishop and Trey White and Christian Benford, anybody that isn't a household name yet that kind of popped out at you? I know it's day one, but, you know, there's a lot of players out here, whether it's one of the tight ends they brought in or anybody. Did anybody pop out for you that might not be, you know, a top-of-mind kind of name?
Well, I think they are both top of mind, but a couple of names I heard people talking about and watched yesterday, and they said, okay, were both the two defensive tackles, Deion Walker and TJ Sanders. A couple of guys that I think, you know, we're going to be watching more of. And again, I say, I don't spend a ton of time on D-line, O-line during these days because there's no pads. But when you see them and their physicality and their size, it stands out to you. So I would say for that reason, Jeremy, those are guys. I don't think there's anybody necessarily. I don't want to start giving too much space to like the bottom end of the wide receiver depth chart, but you know, like KJ Hamler and Jalen Virgil both made plays yesterday, right? Like, I mean, you never know. Is there a scenario in a world where at the end of camp we're like, you know, maybe it's not Elijah Moore, maybe it's one of these guys. They can both move a little bit, right? You need to see more of that, but I thought both of them made a couple of plays yesterday.
Keon Coleman yesterday. Couple of tough plays for him. He's one, we talked about it with your podcast partner there, Matt Beauvais, that he's another one you might want to see in pads because of the style he plays.
Yeah.
He plays like a bully out there. You know, he's probably not going to grow into an elite separator at any point, but what he probably has to do, Sal, is play with his body and win contested catches. And that was the thing yesterday that, like, if they're going back and watching yesterday, I feel like there are a couple of those that you'd like to see him grab.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be how he wins in this league. He's not going to win by blowing by people. That'll happen once in a while, maybe. He's got to win in this league by making the contested catches, by being a guy who can catch the ball even when he's covered sometimes. And Josh knows that. He's going to have to get him the ball in those spots. So we're going to have to see that as camp goes on. We're going to have to see that as you get into the preseason and regular season. And, yeah, I mean, this goes back to the different skill sets these guys have at wide receiver. And you have to have guys who can catch the ball when they're covered sometimes. And I think Keon Coleman's got to be one of those guys.
Sal Capaccio joining us here from St. John Fisher.
James Cook showing up yesterday and doing everything. And how Bean sounded, Sal, is how Bean sounded changing your mind at all on what you think is most likely with him in a contract? Probably at this point, though, more after the season.
Yeah, I still don't think there's any contract on the horizon while here, unless something drastically changes in either way either party thinks, but it appears that that's not the case right now. Good that James Cook is here. Good that James Cook was doing everything. I think the Bills, Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, they appreciate that he's not a distraction by being here and not practicing. Mm-hmm. We all talked about it, guys. If he showed up yesterday, he didn't practice, it'd be a huge story around the league.
Yeah.
Not just here. You'd be talking about it all morning.
It would have stolen every single headline.
It would have been dominating your conversation, your social media.
Hard Knocks goes code red. Like,
I mean,
you know.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you talked about it first segment. Sorry I wasn't listening, but you probably didn't spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
Because it's not much of a story now.
I just mentioned that Bean's tone seems like, at least to me, that the dialogue is still open.
He said it.
Because way back when, it felt like it was very much, well, you know, sorry, we're so far apart that I think it created, if we're really going to the steps along the way, Cook tweets this $15 million, and that's like, whoa. And then Bean at one point kind of painted the picture of, you know, maybe next year we'll talk about it, next offseason. Like, and that was another shot that kind of went into how far apart they might be. And they still might be far apart, but it certainly seems like it's whether it's amicable or whatever it might be, it seems like Bean's talking about how it's him or someone else in the front office that are constantly in contact with the agent. So there is an open dialogue.
And I thought it was interesting he said about even next year. I hope that we get here next year and James Cook is a member of the Buffalo Bills. And there are different levers to make that happen. It doesn't have to be a contract extension. You have the franchise tag. You have the transition tag, right? I mean, the Bills still hold the leverage as far as him being, you know, his rights, so to say. So they can make that happen if they want to happen. It really just comes down to value. It's never been about, do the Bills not want James Cook on the team? The Bills want James Cook on the team. It's all about what the value is of James Cook on the team.
So the transition tag at running back would be interesting. I don't think they'd franchise.
Right.
The transition tag at running back this year was $11
million. That's right.
And that's a number that
Here's the issue with it.
The issue is that that's a straight cap hit.
And it comes right away.
Right, and they're not going to want to do that. So,
and also you really are preventing the player at a position that has a finite timeline of getting his big deal.
Yes.
Like, I wonder if the Bills would, for the team it might make more sense, but would they want to do that to a guy and basically like, okay, you're not going to be eligible now to sign your big contract until you're, what, 27, 28 years old? I wonder if they would want to even do that to him.
I agree. It's not a preferred look. Teams, the Bills don't use it very often. Teams basically try not to, but they do in certain situations. But it is something could happen. If you get to the end of the year and he has a great, great year, the Bills are like, oh, yeah, we got to make sure we keep him. And you have this transition, which goes to maybe $12 million. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a suitable way. But as Jeremy pointed out, which is right, the issue is, do you even have that cap number on hand to do it? Because you have to count it right away against the cap, and it's straight that money that year.
That's where you could do the kind of thing like the Giants did with Barkley that one year, where they brought him back at the franchise number but with something else so they could lower the cap hit. So, you know, next year if it got really sticky, the Bills could go to Cook and say, hey, listen, here's what's going to happen. We're going to transition tag you, so if you won't agree to a deal, because we want to keep you if they want to do this. And that's $11 million. Or we could give you $12 over – 2 years working around where you're still getting the same amount of guaranteed money, but we get to split that cap over 2 years, put a void year on the end of it, or whatever it might be. Like, the cap is so workable that sometimes the franchise tag is the thing that doesn't ever have to be used. It's just a lever to get the parties
talking. That's exactly right.
That's what gets parties talking.
It extends the opportunity to and extends out the timeline of the opportunity to sign a new deal is what it actually does.
And it kind of establishes a floor. Hey, worst case scenario, you're getting this amount of guaranteed money, but it doesn't really work for me, the team, because it doesn't help on the cap, and
that's
I don't
exactly
want to do that.
Right.
So
yes,
we'll see. All right, Sal, practice number two.
Practice number two, bar bill tonight. And listen, if you can't make it, how about this? On Sunday, Matt and I are back at it again. Sunday afternoon, if you guys are around, you should come on up. 2:30 p.m., we're going to be at We the Hobby. We the Hobby is a really cool – we're going to step out of our – I wouldn't say comfort zone because, you know, Mac's a big card collector and I've done this, but we're going to have a couple breakers on the air breaking cards open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They have a big show going on.
Yeah.
Big fan fest, basically. Nice. Lots of cool stuff happening there. We the Hobby, give you the address there, 23 Arlington Street in Rochester. It's a big day, and it's going to be they're calling it the after practice tailgate, and it's going to be like from 2 to 7. We're there from 2:30 to 3:30 doing the podcast.
Cool.
Come on out. We're going to have people on there doing cards and having a good time.
All right. Sal Capaccio. So he'll be updating throughout practice coming up in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And Joe Brady today will carry live.
Joe Brady, 9:15. Yeah.
9:15. So Joe Brady's on the way. Training camp coverage continues here on WGR.
Usually with injuries, there's the first few days of wallowing in your own despair. But, I mean, it's a calf strain. There's a lot worse things going on in the world. You can get through that. And, you know, it was a good time to happen. It's never really a good time to get injured, but, you know, relative to later down the year, you know, I look at it as a positive, being able to, you know, get closer with the staff here, training staff, strength staff. Now we have a really good working relationship after going through all this together. So I think that'll benefit throughout the year, you know, making sure I'm being smart with my body and trying to stay healthy and make it through the year.
That is Joey Bosa. You know what? I think I might have a calf strain. I got to talk to the Bills staff. Get me back on the right track like they did for Bosa. I think I might have a calf strain. I might.
You know, right, can you walk?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like ripped off. It's just strained a little bit. I feel the whole thing. Great moment.
Tight doesn't mean strained.
Great moments. Great moments in training camp history. Howard talking to the Bills team doctor on the field here at Grounding Stadium, asking him about a foot problem he's having. That happened. That is the thing that happened. Great moments in training camp history. I got to text Howard. And what were the
like? It had happened that day, or it's just like nagging foot pain.
I think it was a nagging injury. And he just got a consult.
So it's like, you know, my foot's been sore.
Like, I know the doctor.
Weeks.
I know the hey, you know, when I do this,
yeah.
I don't know if he's listening. He was texting me the other day. He's got to pick the bill soon.
Jeremy
and Joe. Good morning. If you want to join us, you can give us a ring. Here, Joe. Let me give you the call screener computer so you can log us back in.
We get logged out of this thing like we're Desmond on Lost.
I am.
Every few minutes you got
to. For some reason, does anybody have an answer for why I set a screensaver to never turn off and then it still turns off every 10 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody's on hold. That's okay. That's on you guys. Call us. 803-0550. Call us right now about something. So I saw a funny thing. Not funny, but FTN Fantasy.
Okay.
And Aaron Schatz had something. Aaron Schatz works for FTN Fantasy. They did season projections.
Yep.
Right? Run all these simulations. Aaron Schatz, FTN Football Almanac. Couple interesting notes out of this. Number one, the Bills finished 12-5, the best record in football.
Okay.
Also finishing 12-5, AFC North.
Baltimore.
And yep. The NFC West. The Niners. The Niners.
Really? I think most are expecting a step back from them this year a little bit.
Maybe.
12-5.
But the interesting thing there is like, okay, Bills and Ravens have the best record in the AFC at 12-5. You know what that means?
What does that mean?
It means that week one determines home field.
Ah, I see. Yes.
No pressure.
Right.
Hey, it's opening day. Winner of this game. Driver's seat for the one seed.
All year.
Because
it's a two-game lead.
It's a two-game lead.
Yeah.
Right? For the one seed.
Yeah, that's what's on the line.
Pretty
away.
He also, Aaron Schatz, listed all the teams and their chance to win their division by how often they won it in all the simulations. The Bills were the number one team to win their division. Like, they won it in the most simulations.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are 8 teams. The least likely to win, but winning the most simulations, was Jacksonville. He has Jacksonville winning the South at 9-8.
Okay.
The second lowest team in likelihood of winning the division based on how many simulations they won was the Kansas City Chiefs.
Love it. Love it.
7th of 8.
I'm feeling that a lot right now. That division should be good. Really good.
Yeah.
Is it less than half, probably, of those simulations?
Yes, it was 48% where they won the division.
Okay. So, that is mostly an exercise in the next two teams after them, I think, on paper, have closed the gap in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
And are both into year two of their builds here. Like, it's go time. Like, Harbaugh got a year, and the roster, they had to build it up a little bit, and they've done that to some extent. They found a really nice receiver, and the run game was really strong last year. And then Denver is just loaded. And now you don't have rookie quarterback. You get a year two quarterback, a Super Bowl winning coach. They've got great pieces on defense. Like, for me, there was a gap between Kansas City and those other teams. And right now, on paper, I feel like it's pretty closed. Like, I would still think Kansas City's going to get the respect of, well, they have Mahomes and they have Andy Reid. But the rest of it, like, Denver's roster outside of quarterback is better than the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah.
So then it just comes down to, well, how much better do you really truly think Mahomes is right now versus Bo Nix?
Their defense is very good. The Bills did light it up in the playoffs. But their defense is good and probably better this year. And there's a game that's like Bills-Saints level of, oh, my goodness, what carnage is this going to look like on Denver's schedule? Okay, so Bills-Saints, right? Bills-Saints, I don't know what the spread is going to be. The Saints
18,
are one of the
maybe.
20. The Bills are going to throttle them in week four. Do you know who Denver opens with? Denver's first game of the season is kind of amazing for I might want to get to that one just to see what it looks like.
Denver
opens with the Titans.
Okay.
Cam Ward's first ever NFL game is going to be against maybe the best defense in football. Nasty, nasty opener. Welcome to the league. If he does well, you know, we'll see. Week one's one of those times where we think we know everything, and then a team wins. The Saints scored 47 in week one last year, and then, you know, of course, we're terrible.
Remember, the Bills piled it on late also in that game against Denver.
That's right. It was a game in the third quarter.
3:06 left on the clock in the third quarter. So end of the third quarter, 3 minutes to go. The Bills had fourth down, and they were only up 13-7. Like the third quarter was almost over.
Until
they had
Johnson
13 points, and they were facing fourth down. But right, then the Ty Johnson catch, and then the Bills, you know, they pull away after that. So I expect Denver to be the team that gives Kansas City the biggest run for their money. I mean, the Chargers could do it for sure, but I'm fried. picking the Chargers every year to finally do it. I know, different coach. I actually like Herbert, but I don't know. I'm just demoralized by their efforts to actually challenge the Chiefs and fall short so many times. So does that seem right? The day, though, would be the second, even with, you know, all that being said, and there's good reasons to get there. There's no other team other than Jacksonville that's less likely to win their division, like the Eagles with the Commanders and the Cowboys there, or who else? The NFC South, Tampa would be probably that team.
Yeah, basically.
You'd have Tampa being more likely to win their division than Kansas City?
Yep.
Okay.
That's what they've got.
Tampa's loaded on offense.
803-0550. By now, you may or may not have seen the video of a person falling off a raft while revealing the Browns helmet.
Okay, so you believe this could have been staged?
Yes.
Why?
Because here's the main reason.
It's not even like...
Hold on.
The camera view is like from a distance.
It's from a distance.
It's not even...
It's of course being filmed, and everybody knows that.
They know for sure. Oh, it's an unveiling, so yeah. I guess, yeah.
There are two reasons to think this thing is staged.
But they don't know that they're being on. They're taping. Like,
yeah,
they
do.
The guy... Who's taping? What channel? Is that like a local news station? They know that there's a camera from like a mile away from a local news station pointed at them?
Before you ask these questions, I'd like to submit one piece of evidence.
Okay.
All right? I want you to go right now on your phone. Of course, log into the YouTube and subscribe and like and everything. But go to your phone and search the helmet reveal person falls in the water.
There's probably two, put it on the YouTube channel.
There's two pieces of evidence. Number one, the person falling just straight walks, and they walk like they are walking. Like when you're pretending to walk into a pool, when you're jumping in a pool, they're like, I don't know, just to mess around. But that's not the big piece. The big piece is, the way to not take this seriously, look who reacts first and goes over.
Okay, well,
it's a pair of mascots.
Well, they are the only two that are there.
But hold on. The first mascot does not, oh my goodness, they throw a device into the water.
a gentle toss.
There's just a PFD right there to be thrown by a mascot.
Well, what do you want?
What are the how many times in recorded history has a mascot thrown a personal flotation device to a person that has spontaneously fallen in the water? How many times in recorded history? They just, oh, look, it's Brownie the dog. He's got a PFD.
Okay.
Way to go, Brownie the dog.
Wait a minute. I've got a different view, and the mascots are definitely surprised by this. Have you seen this view?
Mascots are surprised by everything.
Have you seen this view from the back camera angle?
Okay, I got a new angle here. Oh, it's being filmed in HD. Yes, look at his reaction. Look at the dog's reaction. It's, oh, my goodness, that is fake.
That he throws that his hands fake. Out like, oh, my goodness,
no.
My guy just fell in the water.
If your guy just fell in the water, you would not mascot react. And that's 100% a mascot reaction. He backs up and throws his hands to the sides. If you saw someone fall in the water spontaneously, you would immediately rush to them. Instead,
he's in a mascot suit.
Instead,
what is he? He's not going to jump in the water with the. How is he possibly going to swim with all of that?
Your angle is more revealing of how fake this it was in a totally staged event. Totally staged.
Let me see how the old woman reacts. We can't really tell. She's off camera.
It's all about the dog. The dog. Why is the dog even looking? You're in a. Oh, even better. Have you ever? Sorry, we're going deep. I'm going deep.
He throws himself back against the like a 1930s sketch comedy. Like, oh.
If you have ever been in a mascot head, have you ever put a mascot's head on?
I have not.
You
no,
can't
I don't
see.
Think.
You have no peripheral vision.
But that's what I mean. You Hold want on. Him with that to jump in the water?
You no. I want you to watch it again.
All right.
Bring Gene Steratore out if you have to. You can only see straight ahead. And what is this mascot dog doing? He is watching him on purpose and turning to watch him fall to then immediately react and say, oh, my.
He's watching him on purpose. He's the guy that's recording them.
No.
He's looking at the camera.
Totally fake. Totally fake based on the dog mascot reaction.
I am. He definitely is selling.
Only,
throwing himself back against
the
helmet with his hands
the
out.
The only but, way that mascot would see him fall in the water is if he were looking for him to fall in the water. Because you would not see the peripheral. He wouldn't see it. You can see nothing in a dog head costume. How many mascot heads have I put on in my life? One. The head of Abner Doubleday.
Uh-huh.
That's the only mascot head I've put on in my life.
Abner Doubleday.
Yeah, Abner Doubleday, the Auburn Doubledays. You can't see anything.
What is the point, though, of throwing yourself off this thing when you're not
viral.
Even recording it yourself?
To go viral. That's the point.
But you are going viral. You've got a brown helmet. Unless that's what you're saying. Are they distracting people from how bad everyone's going to hate the helmet?
All right, we've got a good idea. Walter texts in on the chat. The person to ask is Billy Buffalo. Well, go talk to Billy Buffalo. Do you think you would see this unless you were looking? And this is a
– Listen, that is this guy's steps are pretty genuine, I think. He's reaching out. His foot's not dipping down like expecting to fall.
Oh, yeah.
His foot is expecting just
a person on a raft not looking where they're walking like everybody does when they're on a raft.
He's recording what's in front of him.
100% fake. That mascot gives a mascot reaction and not a human reaction.
I can't get over the mascot.
He might as well say Gadzooks. Gadzooks,
that
he's
is
fallen. Totally fake. All right, we got to get a break in. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 to join us and give us a take on mascot gate if you want that. Joe Brady at 9:15 here on WGR. All right, Jeremy and Joe, I've already convinced you've conceded.
I have evidence that I cannot ignore. Cannot ignore.
Yeah, he swings his leg in a showman way. Apparently, he's got 25 million followers on TikTok. Although that could be a lie, and I would just believe that.
Who's Kevin Bacon in A Few Good Men? Jack. Jack. I'm Jack right now. After Tom Cruise has just gotten the admission out of Jack Nicholson, and he's sitting there.
Jack. His name is Jack.
Captain Jack Ross.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm Jack Ross sitting there with my hands folded right now after Colonel Jessup has just admitted to ordering the code red.
Yeah, the Browns helmet reveal fall in the lake video.
It's fake.
Well, it's a real video.
He's a 25 million TikTok followers.
Staged. Stage.
He does goofball videos. What are the Browns doing hiring a TikToker to fall in the lake during their helmet unveiling? Right. Not a serious organization.
That's right.
Not a serious organization.
All right. 803-0550. Stay tuned. When we get back, we're going to carry Joe Brady's press conference live. We'll give you our reaction to what he has to say. See what he has to say about, you know, some of the new additions. Josh Palmer. Elijah Moore, how things went yesterday, what the game plan is going forward as we get ready for day two of camp. See if we get updates on Spencer Brown's timeline and Dawson Knox, those two missing yesterday, Cedric Van Pran Granger as well, and Laviska Shenault. So all four pieces that were out with an injury yesterday, we'll get maybe an update, see if there's any sort of timeline, but all four missing from Joe Brady's side of the ball. Jeremy and Joe live from St. John Fisher training camp here with the Buffalo Bills on WGR.